Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Inspiral Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in again. And today we're bringing back another guest that I interviewed literally about 100 episodes ago. I think it was episode 60 with Jonathan Hammond. And I'll put a link up for that too, so you can check that out, because it was a really, really wonderful interview. I really enjoyed that one when I got to talk to Jonathan. And Jonathan is the author of The Shaman's Mind, Huna Wisdom to Change Your Life. And you can go back and check that out to get more of the bio. I'll put all the bio in the show notes, but I want to jump into this conversation because Jonathan has a really unique perspective that ties in sort of this shamanic elder healer sort of tradition of how do we view life from. And I think that information is really pertinent to when we're talking about this concept of the illusion of free choice and the return to mastering your own life. Because as you go through your book, Jonathan, you definitely see that traditional elders like that view the lens that they look at life through is very different than the average person. And so I think as we go through the different parts of this interview today, we're going to touch on a lot of pieces that'll pull back to both of those concepts. So Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
Aloha. It's so good to be with both of you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Aloha. Oh, you're welcome. Aloha back. So Jonathan is in Hawaii right now, so which is awesome. One day we will make it out there, my friend, and we'll come and visit
I'll
you.
I'll show you around. I love
it. Sounds good. You know, I would love to start because I remember when I was reading your book the first time, just in even the intro, really some really profound stuff, I think, even just in the intro before you even get into all of the teachings. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe a good place to start would be, you talk in the beginning about the massive planetary shift in consciousness that's currently taking place. And maybe to start off, we can start from your perspective as sort of what that's about, and maybe even where are we currently from your perspective in that? Because the last time I talked to you was right at the beginning of big lockdowns with COVID and kind of where we are now. And that would be a good place to kind of kick this off.
Yeah, not to be too dramatic, but I think it's a kind of an apocalyptic revelation. That's what's happening right now, as has been prophesied by many of the indigenous cultures. And I think more than anything, it is what the invitation now, sociologically and personally, is a turn away from what the Native Americans called Wetiko, that virus, that parasite of the mind that operates on the idea that we're separate. The Gnostics called it the demiurge, the false god of the binary, the false god of the conventional. And I think that that what's being revealed right now is about the choice, to use that word, to turn away from conventional mainstream ideas, rules, expectations about what we are and what we're expected to be, toward something more natural and more internal within us. And that that we have the biological wiring to find a different directionality for ourselves, but it can only be accessed through the turning away from the overculture into something that is more dropped into ourselves. And it is the same evolutionary life force that infuses nature. And so that we are wired to connect with our own individual evolutionary life force that, for my money, is the same evolutionary life force as we see in nature. Because if you think of the Earth, it just keeps evolving, it keeps growing, it keeps creating itself. And we don't live on Earth, we are Earth. And that means that intelligence and that evolutionary force lives in us. But we're so socialized to pull away from it, to ideas about what men are, what women are, what society is, what money is, what politics are, all of those things, that we pull away from the very programming or the inner apparatus that we need to traverse these changing times, because it's in there. And if we can all access it, we'll know how to traverse these times.
So moving from an outer authority to inner authority, and yeah, one that is aligned with nature, is that what we're what you're suggesting? Jonathan, can you speak a little bit more about Wetiko? We even did a short clip on it during the last episode, but I would love it if the audience is not familiar, just so that they can kind of get an overview of what that means.
Yeah, what it means and how it plays out in our lives, because, you know,
how it influences us.
Yeah, part of what I think is so important around these kind of conversations is it's like there's a shedding light on things that's really essential so that we can then re-see it and make new choices. Yeah. So maybe share a little bit, like Tay had mentioned, what Wetiko is and how that's sort of playing out in people's lives that they might not even be aware of.
Yeah, it was identified as a kind of parasite or virus of the mind, of the human mind, that in a way we are all at least potential carriers of. There's even a Hawaiian word for it, e'epa, which is translated as deceit that defies comprehension. Mm. So it is this part of the psyche that tunes into the illusion of separation, which is what's wrong with everything. If we could all know that we are simply individual apertures through which the one reveals itself, then we would stop our dominion over nature. We would stop being cruel to each other. We would stop hoarding wealth. We would stop every kind of ism that we don't like, because essentially Wetiko is about the forgetting that what we do individually has a direct and substantive effect on ourselves because we are part of the all. So another way to think of that kind of unity is that we're all individual waves in the ocean, but we can't separate ourselves from the ocean. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is so how we act and what we do has a direct effect on the collective. And this virus of the mind obscures that. And brings us toward a kind of solipsistic existence, our own narcissism, our own. And the other thing about Wetiko is that it's characterized as self-cannibalizing, meaning mm-hmm. that it is designed to kill the host. And the Native Americans, they were the ones who identified this. There's another correlation. The Gnostics talked about the demiurge, which is they called the false god of the binary. So the demiurge is, and the demiurge and the archons, the evil, the kind of evil agents that worship the demiurge. And so the Gnostics were very tuned into the actual teachings of Christ, which are about connectivity and love and all of those things. And they identified that armchair morality that was birthed with the organized religion movements about good, bad, black, white, you know, amazing, terrible, which is all we see. All we see is the binary, and that is what is considered conventional now. And of course, with the binary is with the separate, is the idea that I'm other than you, you know. And so the what's happening now on the planet is a waking up to the idea that we aren't separate, and that those binary polarities are no longer they've worn out their welcome. You know, even Jung in 1951, Carl Jung wrote when he was going through his more mystic phase as opposed to his psychological phase. He wrote that in December 2020, he wrote this in 1951, a book called Ion, that in December 2020, we would end the Piscean Age, which he characterized as an age that was a battle between good and evil, a battle that we would lose. And in December 2020, we would enter the Aquarian Age, which he considered the next 2000 years to be about individuation, meaning that the human would develop not against those different polarities, good, bad, black, white, but an internal truth and an integration of one's darkness and an acceptance of one's darkness and shadow and all of those things, so that we can get on with it, and so that we can see that that everything is gray, and that we're supposed to all exist in the gray together. And that the next 2000 years, Jung said, would be a time when we do that. And so so at the beginning of healing, and you know this as healers, at the beginning of any healing, all the darkness comes up, all the shadow material comes up, all the stuff that we wish wasn't there, but we now need to acknowledge in order to address it. And that's really what's going on the planet right now. And part of what's really being acknowledged more than anything else is that virus of the mind that believes in separation.
Yeah, I think that theme has come up several times with different people. And we talked about that a lot with Paul too, in a different way. And so whenever we see those correlations, mm-hmm. I always think that's really, really important. And kind of like when we think about what's going on, first, it's like over the past 2 years, that degree of separation has been so amplified, I think, to make it so obvious how polarized we can be. And then I feel like there's a transition happening right at the moment that's allowing for some reconciliation to take place around that and to start to see it differently. Because you did, you know, you've seen polarizations, even polarizations in families. And now I'm seeing opportunities for families to kind of come back again together and sort of drop some of the ideologies that maybe they've held or some of these types of things. So it seems like in what Paul said, you know, we've experienced separation as far as we can go as a human race. Right. And now if we kept on going, we would basically be destroying ourselves. So now is the pathway back.
And you know, just to say this out loud, I think that polarization is by design. I think part of the conventional overculture is one of an unconscious enslavement to it, you know. When you think of the idea of that so many of us yearn for the paradise of childhood, what Jung called the paradise of childhood, that sense that we're really taken care of and we're really loved. And so many of us didn't get that. And so we were looking for a parent. And those at the tip top go, I'll be your parent. Mm-hmm. I'll be your parent. And follow these rules. And they're all rules toward enslavement. So that polarization is by design. And what we're waking up from, what we need to wake up from, is that we're being duped into following someone else's rules that are meant to enslave. And that's the part that's so important. Yeah, go ahead.
I love that you brought that up, because that's a part of the heart of what this whole series is about. And even prior to this one was a series called Know Thyself. It was bringing questions to facilitate a shift and bringing people back from an outer authority to an inner authority. And when you talked about nature earlier on, I feel like this is where sometimes people get confused with what do we even mean by nature? And I think it's because we've been so disconnected from it that we've lost what that even means. You know, a lot of old traditions worked, medicine was built around nature, you know, the elements of the planet, all these different things. So a lot of times I think, you know, there's an aspect of getting into nature, like maybe get out of technology all the time and get back to something natural. Like there's a different frequency that you're going to be immersed in when you're in nature that I think creates a resonance which allows you to connect more back to that true self. So when we talk about nature, what does that mean from your perspective from a shaman perspective as far as, you know, physically in nature, but then even acting from like natural principles within ourselves?
Yeah. So if you think about what shamanism really is more than anything, it is a reverence for nature. So Christians worship Christ and Buddhists worship Buddha and shamanic practitioners or earth-based practitioners, they worship nature. What we're worshiping and what we're seeing in nature is a template to teach us about ourselves. So if you leave the forest alone to do its thing, that forest will continue an endless process of continued growth, evolution. It doesn't deny itself what is good for it. It reaches towards the sun. It takes in the water. It roots itself into the earth. And it is everything in nature is of itself so, meaning that it is a spontaneous and unapologetic and non-self-conscious expression of what it is. And we are all individually that. That is us. We are not separate from nature. We are beings of nature. So when we talk about following our own nature, we're talking about that unapologetic, unselfconscious, of itself so-ness that is Jonathan and Jason and Taya, that we're following that. And the only way to get there is by turning away from the rules. Someone else's rules, someone else's idea about what we're supposed to be. And because we're wired for it. So when we talk about the forest continuing that process of growth and evolution, there's an energy underneath that. And the energy underneath that, something moving towards growth and evolution, what would that energy be? What would that intentionality be? It can only be love, because it can only be something that wants to keep going, that wants to celebrate itself and understand itself more fully. And that's called love. And so that is surging within us. But with that comes the impoliteness of telling our own truth and living from our own truth and our own set of and our own set of rules. And that is what, when we talk about coming back to nature, we're never going to go back to all living in tents and in cabins, and you know, that's not it. But the rewilding of the psyche is back toward that, is back toward a sense of the only truth that's real is the one that feels right, or the one that doesn't feel right. Truth is a felt experience. This is just facts. And you find that below the waist. That's why when Jung spoke about libido, he wasn't talking about sexuality. He was talking about the life force that comes from the place from which we create.
Yeah.
And it's deep within us. And that's, the Hawaiians even have a word for the gut, which they call na'au, which is translated as the heart of the mind. It's also genitals and guts, intestines. And the idea is that's the true wisdom place for us. This one is just adhering to the culture.
Yeah.
That's really the difference. So I does that help you understand the correlation?
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
That makes my heart sing, Jonathan. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy having this conversation with you and your candidness around it, because I think it's really important. I really do think that these are things people need to think about, because, you know, getting back to a natural state of living. And you combine natural and you brought love into that too. And I really feel like the concept of love needs to be re-examined for people, because it's got sometimes this inherent, almost like it's okay, everybody kind of stay loving. And there's an aspect of that, but there's a ferocity that's inherent in love too. And there's boundaries around it. And there's a lot of pieces to it that can be ferocious as well. I mean, look at like a mama bear, right? There's got to be a ferocity in that comes from a place of love. So I love that you also met. I mean, these are so many things that we've been really deep in ourselves for a while. And so I love hearing it kind of mirrored back from someone that we haven't talked to for a while. So, but around the spontaneousness and the non-apologetic unself-consciousness, this is where the discomfort comes for people. Like, This is also a really important part, I think, that is part of this conversation. We talk about free will, right? Mm-hmm. How much of the choices that we make, do we make because they stay within that sort of comfort zone of what we become familiar with? When we start to do what Jonathan's talking about and really start to abide by what is naturally, what are those spontaneous instructions within ourselves that are surfacing at any given moment in time? And are we able to adhere to that? Or do we kind of re-rationalize it in the brain and then sort of dampen it back down again? I think this is stuff that naturally tends to come up when we start to do that. But the more that we do it, I feel like that natural wave can't be stopped after a while.
Yeah, the thing that's tricky is, Freud identified a part of the psyche. He identified three parts of the psyche, and one is called the superego. And the superego is the part of the psyche that is wired toward assimilation. that is wired toward the toward convention, wired toward fitting in. Superego is great for things like not eating with your hands at a fancy restaurant and wearing black at a funeral and those sort of things. But we have relegated it to its supreme importance. So we're living in a culture that is mired with what everyone thinks, what everyone thinks of us. And we think that's what we're supposed to do. And with that comes being too good, which is a big problem in this culture. You know, we think of people doing bad stuff, but when you're too good, you're actually turning against yourself sometimes, you know? So we're wired toward that. So it's a tricky thing to come back to something that is, that again, is about the impolite bluntness of what is true for me, and having a rapport with that, and what you find is that when you can tune into that, that it gives everyone a sense of relief that they can do that for themselves, mm-hmm. and it actually leads to a more shared experience rather than a kind of fanatic trying to fit into something that isn't necessarily your own. You know, so that's what I would say, is that we're really up against psychologically, particularly in the Western psyche, we have an urge, a drive to assimilate, and it's keeping us from something just more authentic in ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I think when people second guess even what's coming up for them, maybe in the language that you're speaking of. Yep. They're unsure as to whether it's coming up due to the Wetiko influence, or their own alignment with nature. How would you discern between what those two feel like, or feel how they feel different?
One feels evolutionary. One feels that there's a sense of growth in it. One contain, you know, in the Hawaiian tradition, in the Huna tradition, love's perspective is always present in every choice that we make. Mm-hmm. That isn't necessarily airy-fairy love, because as Jason said, love can be ferocious. Love can be get away from me. Love can be I need to put up a boundary. Love can be I need to turn away from a family member, you know. But what we look at is that perspective is always present. So when you think of the false voices in your head, those are the ones that are in some way, they don't offer anything. They don't offer any growth. They don't offer any possibility. They don't offer a sense that I can create further if I take this thought form and I hold it close to my heart and I really alchemize it. You know, you can, and it's not leading me anywhere other than fear, doubt, low self-esteem, stuck in my tracks, you know? And so it's about listening. It's about really identifying that if the voice is not evolutionary, it's not a true voice. Not sometimes, always.
Mm. Describing it, I think of like, I think maybe one is more contraction, tightening, as opposed to opening and feeling more expansive.
That's right. You know, I often use this sort of analogy with clients. It's like stay in the tension. So there's the old way, there's the old Jonathan, the old Jason, and then there's the new Jason that hasn't come on board yet. Stay in that tension. Fight with yourself. And then, you know, if you stay in that tension, the new Jason forms. And with that comes the paradigm shift, new rules, new ideas, and a different sense of limitlessness available on the other side of that. But you got to stay in that tension. It's when we lay down. When we lay down and we pull away from our own, of course, resistance and healing, they go hand in hand, two sides of the same coin, you know. And to stay in that until this new way forms. That's the invitation for everyone, mm-hmm. in terms of their own growth and healing.
That I'll sometimes, like when we're having conversations with different things, it reminds me of concepts in osteopathy, and because I'm an osteopath too. And it's like how we often talk about working with fascial tension. You know, you literally mm-hmm. stay in the tension, and it's while you stay in the tension, and be respectful and sort of dialoguing with the body in that tension, the tension gradually moves and unwinds and eventually comes to a new place and a new sensation within the tissue itself. It's no longer the same, but the only way through it is to stay in the tension and allow it to kind of unravel.
And in the Hawaiian tradition, it's considered that all illness, physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, is born of tension. Mm. And all health comes from a release of tension.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's certainly clear with your mind as well.
Yeah. You know?
Because when you destabilize that default network in the brain that is constantly telling you what the rules of you are, and when you can destabilize that and see that for what it is, there's so much more on the other side of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, what are some tools that you offer to your students when you're working with clients as far as what to do if they have trouble staying with that tension?
I think I would say, I don't know what the hell else you have better to do with yourself other than paying attention. I think I would say that, that more than anything. I think that, you know, it's important to, you know, with the resistance toward healing, toward growth, there is, you always have to tell the inner child the benefits. You have to be aware of the benefits because you, even in giving up a bad habit, there are benefits in the bad habit. There are benefits in being stuck always. And so you have to give this part of you the benefits of being unstuck. And if you don't know what they are, then you imagine them. And the imagination is the most powerful tool of the shamanic practitioner, but really of anyone, because when we are inspired to become something that we're not, it is only through the imagination that we can get there, because we're not there yet, you know. So it is about, what is it that you want, and become that now. And if you can't, stay in the tension of whatever it is that's keeping you from becoming it. So I would say that, and also a really sober assessment of what are you running through your system. What are you telling yourself? What rules are you following? What are those habitual beliefs and ways of being and ways of thinking of yourself that are just on autopilot, that you aren't even aware of, that have gone unexamined? And wake up to them. What's coming up on your screen of awareness? If you don't like it, what are you going to do about it? And there is something to do about it. And it's that work with oneself. It's called being awake. It's called living a spiritual life. It's called being creatively engaged with what's happening in oneself, you know? And as long as we stay in that, we're doing the thing that Carl Jung said would be the end of us, which is projecting our unacknowledged stuff onto the world, onto everyone, you know? And so this is about, I need to clean up my mess enough that it doesn't spill over into someone else's experience. And that's all anyone has to do. But that comes through creative engagement with what's happening in you. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. A few different things come to mind when you're talking about that. Maybe first, let's talk about, because I think when we're talking about wrestling with all those things and coming out that other side, I mean, to me, that ties right into the concept of choices, because we're really choosing from very different places. And you talked about even like the different possibilities. And I know in the book, I think even say that attuning oneself to a magical spectrum of infinite possibilities, unseen truths, alternative realities, and spiritual support. So maybe to kind of give people a perspective of like, what is on the other side? You know, what is actually available to us when we start to make choices from this other aspect, as opposed to what's kind of been running our life through this place of Wotiko for the most part?
Limit and lack.
What are the things that are possible?
Well, let me say this. The outward dream of our each of our individual lives, whatever is in our life, whoever is in our life, whatever the circumstances, are a symbolic reflection of what's going on inside us. And so that means that if you want the divine in your life, if you want God in your life, then you create God right here. And what is your version of God right here? That you are infusing yourself with what you imagine God to be, which is infinite love. So self-love is not just a nice idea. It's not just a bumper sticker. It's not just a meme on Facebook. If you actually did it, it's the way in which you bring the divine to you. You become in sympathetic vibration with the divine. And so the divine is not something that just smiles on the lucky few. The divine comes and works in your life based on an inner world that is in alignment with it, or working toward being in alignment with it. And so with that then comes, and I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but choice from the kupua, from the Hawaiian shamanic tradition, is considered a magical power.
That's a beautiful way to actually think about it.
That's right. And so that means that the choice, so I'm seeing what my life is, and I'm seeing that is only an outward reflection of what lives in me. So if I change my inward dream, my outward dream changes. So in Hawaii, they think of old Hawaii, not the Hawaiians that are on the cell phones now, but the old Hawaii. the day is considered to start at nighttime. And it's in the nighttime, the inward, the darkness, the unseen dream, that manifest existence of daylight emerges. So our inner dream is one how we curate it, how we choose to think of it, what beliefs we choose to finance and give clout to, how we think to take care of ourselves, what we're putting in our mouths. All of those things are in some way building what your external world can become. And that can be anything based on how you take care of yourself and how you self-invest in your inward dream.
I think that's so beautiful. And what you're speaking of is such a timely message, because I think of, you know, all the stuff that we've been hearing around the Great Reset and Agenda 2030 and so on. I feel like even beyond that agenda, there is this bigger agenda, much, much higher power at play here, which is maybe allowing all these other smaller agendas to move through in order to create a catalyst for where it is that humanity can truly move into that would be of benevolence and union and peace and prosperity for everyone. I think of even, you know, the quarantine that so many of us have been in for the past 2.5 years. And what you're speaking of is like nighttime going within and reflecting and reevaluating. It almost seems like a metaphor for those teachings.
Yes. And I think that that this was a real opportunity for everyone to do that, even though it was a pain, and even though it was scary, and even though it shook things up, it was a real opportunity. I think if you were someone who thought, okay, there's a pandemic, and when it's over, my life as I know it will continue, and I'm just waiting for it to be over. I think those people this summer, within the last 3 months, are now faced with the opportunity that was missed by not going inward and not looking at what's actually happening within me. I think of COVID as a kind of evolutionary spirit. Now, that's not a very popular thing to say, but that's sort of just how it, and having had COVID and journeying with it, that was my experience with it, is I felt like I was being made over. Mm-hmm. On some level. And I got it literally day after shutdown in March 2020, and had it for a month. And it was so helpful because it helped me understand what it was. And even if it does come from bats, you know, the shamanic meaning of bats are about death and rebirth. That's what they represent. And so literal death, and also the death of things that are no longer useful or relevant, and then the rebirth towards the new things. And I feel like that's very much what's happening on the planet right now. And I think COVID is a kind of metaphor for that. The other thing to say is that with this conventional overculture, you know, this polarized binary overculture, comes at this time on the planet, the emergence of the non-binary and the non-binary person who says, by virtue of what I am, I don't fit with you people and you have to deal with me. And that is, and it's not that everyone is that, but those beings are here for an evolutionary purpose. They are here to usher in something that is different than this polarized thing that we've been doing since we've started civilization 6,000 years ago, you know? And there's this other thing that's really emerging now. And even Jung, clearly I'm a Jung fan, but, you know, even Jung in his identification of anima and animus, you know, that was the masculine and feminine within all of us, you know, that he was pointing towards something. And I think that the new human, the new man, the new woman is more about a merging of those energies, a merging of the split between us individually. And if we do that individually, that has an effect on the way the collective separates.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe you can tie in when they talk about the fifth Pachacuti that I think was the Quechua people in the South Andes talked about. Yeah. Because that's kind of in alignment with that, sort of this idea that the, you know, we've kind of been in a more predominant sort of masculine energy, maybe a little bit more, and we're moving more. And I remember reading about this a long time ago when they were talking about the transition that was going to take place from the Piscean to the Aquarian age.
Yeah.
And that there was, how they described it at the time was that there was a movement from more of a solar plexus chakra dominance to more of a heart chakra dominance. But it's not that you're losing this, but you're balancing these out together. And so this is where I think this blending, but maybe you can share that story a little bit for people that aren't familiar with it.
Yeah. So a Pachacuti, so this comes from the Quechua people of the high Andes, and a Pachacuti is a 500 year interval. And they and the Quechua people, you know, it's shaman time, so you have to kind of be fudge a little bit what exactly they mean. But they talk about this being the fifth Pachacuti, and this is a time when the eagle, which from their perspective is considered a bird that is about masculine energy, directive, logic, informational, that during the fifth Pachacuti, the condor, which is considered environmental, feminine, intuitive, that the previous Pachacutis have been dominated by the eagle, and that now that the eagle and the condor would fly together in the same sky, that they would merge together, and that was the invitation during this time on the planet. So that's one of the prophecies, but there are so many that are about this time. The rainbow prophecy of the Cherokee and the Iroquois, which is about people from with all different ethnicities. The rainbow is literally skin color, you know, all coming together to usher in the light. You know, there's the Kali Yuga in the Hindu tradition. There's so many, but it does seem to be and what I love about the prophecies too is that they do talk about it's going to be tough, but they don't talk about that it's going to be the end. And I don't think that it is. I don't think that's where we're going. I think it's just what's happening right now is forced change. And with forced change comes resistance and the need for a lot of healers, because that's what you do when you're in the midst of a forced change in your life, is you go see a healer, you know? And so I think that the age of the person who is wired toward helping the collective, which is what I think light workers are on the planet, whether or not you're a professional one or not, you know, are really needed at this time on the planet, because they're the ones that are going to usher in this new way of being, you know, in the midst of this really forced change.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Good. Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato. Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
You know, one thing that I'm curious about is, like, even when you were talking about with the non-binary, and it's like aspects of that make complete sense to me, especially when I think about these stories that have come up from before and around what you had just mentioned. What I often seem like goes on at times is I feel like there's always this blending, maybe not always, but a lot of the time I feel like there's this blending of stuff that comes from like a place of really profound truth and purity. And then there's also this aspect that feels like it tries to use some of that, but it more has a feeling of manipulation that doesn't come from the same place. And I mean, to me, I feel like this is all the time, and I've seen this in like healthcare forever. But it's like, it's almost like it's not wrong, but it's not, doesn't have the same purity attached to it. And you feel like it's being almost manipulated or used in a way, for I don't even know what, but it just feels like it's whether for personal gain or something along those lines. And that happens, and I've seen like across the board on almost everything, whether it's education, whether it's finance, whether it's medicine, you know, you see parts of something that sounds true and has this really nice feeling attached to it, but it's kind of being used in a way that's not quite so pure anymore.
It's distorted.
It gets distorted.
Yeah.
And I find that still, even with what's, I think, going on now with this sort of blending of stuff, there's parts of it that feel so real. And I know different people that are going through things, and it feels like almost like a, sometimes like a physical manifestation of what I think is this union of things. And then there's other parts where I feel like it kind of gets manipulated and distorted. How do you discern the difference between those things for people? Because I think it can be a tricky place to navigate sometimes.
Yeah. I often talk about the Instagram healers. You know, they take the weekend workshop and then they, and I think that there is, that the culture is such that at 19, 20 years old, we have a device where we are supposed to put the product of us on that's supposed to live forever and be what we are. And so there's very little sense of a tolerance for the process of actually becoming a wisdom keeper. And the process of becoming a wisdom keeper is about, where in my life am I not walking my talk? You know, and the reason why those things feel plastic or phony, you know, despite the fact that they've read the books and they have enough of the wisdom to impart it, is that on some level, something is being compartmentalized. When you think of living a spiritual life is about the confrontation of the compartmentalization that keeps you from living a spiritual life. That's what it is. And if you're not doing that, it rings hollow. That said, they, from where I sit, they have their purpose because they get people in the door. And if a half-baked healer gets someone in the door, gets them thinking about that they have choices, and that there are other possibilities available to them, even the possibilities that there's things going on the planet that you should tune into, I say God bless them. But you can feel authenticity. You can feel authenticity with the message. And more than anything else, it really is about that. It's also about when, to go back to the superego, when the superego, what does everyone think of me, is involved in healing, in imparting spiritual wisdom, and those things do not go together. So with my clients, I don't care if they like me, because I may have to tell them something that they may not like. So that can't even be on the table for me. And I certainly can't care what they think of me, because I have to remain true to the messages that I'm getting, you know? And so I think that when you connect with the overculture that is so mired in what everyone thinks, and status and money and all those things, and you try to merge that with true spiritual teachings, they don't mix. And that's why they feel hollow. Mm-hmm. So that's my take on that.
Yeah, and I think it ultimately, I mean, all of it comes up for us to continually, within ourselves, keep trying to know what truth is and what sort of more falsehood is. And it's a path that I think we just keep, as we keep navigating it, we get a better sense in ourselves of what resonates, what doesn't, and we spend less time engaging in things that don't, if we're learning from them. So,
and you know, the purpose of elders is really about, everyone needs someone to answer to. Everyone needs someone to answer to. Everyone has their compartmentalized stuff. Everyone has their stuff that they don't see. You know, I mean, I have a full-time practice, and every week for 20 years, I see someone who knows my clients by name at this point, and we talk through their stuff, and we talk through what it's bringing up in me, and we talk through how do I keep myself clean in this, you know? And whether or not you're a professional healer or not doesn't matter. We need to have someone to answer to. Mm-hmm. I'll even say this, we need our own version of confession. Mm-hmm. We need that.
Yeah, we wholeheartedly agree with that as well. I feel like even with us, we have mentors too that we study at different times with and work with one-on-one as well, just to kind of check in, because sometimes you miss things that different aspects of self, or there's shadows that come up, and
or the chinks in your armor, mm-hmm. that you just can't see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so important. It's so important. And what's wrong, capital W wrong, on the planet is the absence of that process with everyone individually. That's what's wrong. It's that which has not been examined in oneself, which, and you know, the psyche is always moving towards homeostasis, which means that when we project, when we splay out our shit onto another, what the psyche is doing is trying to get us to see that thing in us that we're not acknowledging. You know, so that's why that's there. So it is, projection is a helpful psychological mechanism if you take the message and if you wake up to it and if you examine why that's happening.
Yeah, would you agree that emotions have a similar place as well? Like they can be helpful in that sense as well? Or what's your take on that?
Well, emotions are directional, right? When you think of, you know, you don't decide to be angry, it just starts happening. You don't decide to start crying, it's just you start crying. You don't decide to start feeling horny, you just feel horny. So it's connected, that part of us is connected to nature. So anything that is spontaneous, to go back to that word at the beginning of our conversation, spontaneous and unapologetic, is truth trying to reveal itself to you. And our job is to get the conscious mind to listen to it. You know, it doesn't mean always act on it. We're not always going to follow our horniness or our rage or whatever. But the acknowledgement of that is our opportunity to do something skillful and creative with it, because it's directional. Even something as unattractive as jealousy is really saying, I want what that guy has. That's directional. That's evolutionary. You know, and if you use it as such, those darker colors of us are things that help us grow. And to liken it to nature, if you think of the things in nature that we don't like, the tarantulas and the great white sharks and those things, we don't think they're not supposed to be there. We don't like them, but we don't think they're not supposed to be there. And to treat ourselves as a being of nature, it's the same with us. And those beings in nature that we don't like serve a purpose. They are part of the interdependence of nature, and they're needed. which means that all of our stuff is needed. If we can acknowledge it as such and work with it and turn it into something creative and evolutionary for ourselves.
Yeah, and it comes back to, like you had mentioned, that with when we recognize if there's something we want in from our neighbors or something along these lines, it's also being able to be non-judgmental of yourself and be honest and authentic, that's kind of where we are. Otherwise, the alternative is that we're really just denying what we are, never really giving us the chance to actually start to progress from that too. Because there's often so much guilt and shame attached to the thoughts of what we've been, what has been deemed to be the correct behavior or what's sinful or all of these different things. And that's created so much, it causes so many people to kind of shut down before they give themselves a chance to actually work with what's inherently coming up.
Yeah. Well, and the antithesis of love is criticism and judgment. If you want to block love, bring in criticism and judgment. That's what that is, you know? And again, criticism and judgment, and particularly judgment, is part of the overculture's enslavement that came with the armchair morality of good, bad, black, white, sin, not sin, etc. And so when we are judging ourselves or criticizing, that's Wetiko. That's at least the seeds of it, you know. That's the seeds of leaving ourselves and merging with the overculture, you know. Now, it doesn't mean we don't assess. It doesn't mean we don't take in feedback that feels helpful and growthful to us. But when it's just about criticism and judgment separate and love conjoins. And if we're moving towards conjoinment and away from separation, then criticism and judgment are really in the way of that happening.
From your perspective, Jonathan, what is the overculture and when did that even start? It's almost like, where was the birth of Wetiko in the first place? This comes to the end of our time for this episode. Please go to inspirehealthpodcast.com and listen to the remainder of this important episode. Thank you so much.